Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced in upstate New York for WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Vocalist Somi Kakoma, professionally known as Somi, has been awarded the prestigious Doris Duke Artist Award. Each year, the prize is given to individual performing artists to celebrate their contributions to jazz, contemporary dance, and theater at large. In March of 2022, she released her album Zenzeel, the reimagination of Miriam Makeba, starred in the off-Broadway production of Dreaming Zenzeel at New York Theater Workshop, and made her debut performance at Carnegie Hall. For more information, DorisDukeArtistAwards.org. Three events on Thursday, February 23rd. Highlights in Jazz celebrates 50 years with a gala concert at the BMCC Tribeca Performing Arts Center in New York City. It boasts an all-star lineup, including NEA Jazz Master vocalist Sheila Jordan, guitarist Gene Bertoncini and Russell Malone, bassist Jay Leonhardt, and special guests. For more information, TribecaPAC.org. Sony Hall presents Vocalist Ledisi in a tribute concert to iconic vocalist, pianist, and activist Nina Simone. Ledisi sings Nina, the title taken from Ledisi's 2021 release. The performance will be at Stern Auditorium inside Carnegie Hall in New York City. For more information, carnegiehall.org. And Reed player Roscoe Mitchell and his trio perform at the Promontory in Hyde Park, Illinois. For more information, promontorychicago.org. On Friday, February 24th, percussionist Cahil El-Zabar and his Ethnic Heritage Ensemble perform at the Back Room in Berkeley, California, celebrating their 49th anniversary. For more information, backroommusic.com. South African pianist and composer Nodeduzo Makathini and Brazilian mandolin player Hamilton de Hollanda perform with special guests in the Appel Room at Jazz at Lincoln Center on Friday, February 24th and Saturday, February 25th. Both nights for two sets each, and there will be a free pre-concert lecture for each performance. For more information, 2023.jazz.org. Noise Pop and SF Jazz present saxophonist Zoa Amba for two sets on Saturday, February 25th at the Joe Henderson Lab inside of the SF Jazz Center. For more information, sfjazz.org. Coming to Roulette in New York City, the Benefit for Disaster Aid in Turkey and Syria on Sunday, February 26th. Featured artists include Laurie Anderson, John Zorn, Sean Ono Lennon, Sarah Serpa, Margaret Glaspie, Julian Lage, Joe Lovano, Dave Douglas, and more. For more information, roulette.org. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Jazz Club, continuing her engagement through Saturday, February 25th, vocalist Jane Monheit. And on Sunday, February 26th, brass artist Earl McIntyre's tribute and pianist Arturo O'Farrell and his Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. And inside of Birdland Theater, vocalist Lauren Henderson and her quartet on Thursday, February 23rd, and Frank Vignola's Guitar Night on Wednesday, March 1st, with special guest, guitarist Saul Rubin. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Salvant is on tour. Her next stop is at the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Friday, February 24th. The performance is titled Ogress, Envisioned. For more information, walkerart.org. Guitarist Mark Rebo presents The Jazz Bins, his trio with Hammond B3 player Greg Lewis and drummer Chad Taylor at Le Poisson Rouge in New York City on Friday, February 24th. For more information, lpr.com. And two upcoming performances at The Django in New York City. Trombonist Conrad Herwig and the Latin Jazz All-Stars continue their Tuesday night residency on February 28th with The Latin Side of Joe Henderson. And bassoonist Michael Rabinowitz and his quartet will give a CD release performance on Wednesday, March 1st. For more information, thedjangonyc.com. And now for upcoming releases. Vocalist Ami Nuviola's Havana Nocturne on Worldwide Entertainment. Bassist Christian McBride's Prime on Brother Mister. Bassist Scott Petito's Many Worlds on Planet Arts. And multi-instrumentalist Tonico's self-titled release on Far Out Recordings. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guests are members of the ensemble East Access, reed player Scott Robinson, pianist Matthew Shipp, and bassist Kevin Ray. Their second collaboration, released by bassist Christian McBride's Brother Mister, an imprint of Mack Avenue Records, is titled No Subject and is available now. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No Subject sounds as much of a workout as your 2001 debut, Cool With That, on ESP Disc. You describe East Access as, quote, a visionary improvising quartet. What was the vision for Cool With That, and has it changed or expanded with the release of No Subject?
Matt here. I would say that being that there's a rhythm section and a horn player, and now there's two different albums and two different horn players, the horn player doesn't dictate but sets the tone for kind of a lot of where we can go. I mean, because the rhythm section is reacting to the personality of the horn player, and you cannot find two different personalities than Alan Lowe and Scott. They're two completely different musical entities and people and universes. So in our reaction to them, because we are an interactive group, that determines a lot of the tone colors and the places that we go. And that's the challenge, and that's the fun, and that's the exhilaration of the group. So that's my answer to how the two albums, I mean, it's pretty simple why they are two distinctly different universes, the two albums.
All right. Well, I'm Scott Robinson. I mean, I'm not on the first record, so I can't really answer the question, but I'll just respond to Matt by saying that, to me, I don't think of it as a horn player and a rhythm section. To me, it's all individual, distinct, interrelated units of equal weight and dimension. You know, I mean, I take just as many cues from them, whether they know it or not, as they might from me. So that's how that to me, it's just four individual players, and it doesn't matter that some of the instruments are commonly thought of as rhythm instruments, although there's times when they choose to function as a rhythm section. To me, it's more independent voices.
This is Matt. I just wanted to say, I didn't mean it in the sense that you have a horn player up front who we're taking cues from. I didn't mean that at all. And I agree with Scott completely that it's an interconnected bestow of four people. All I meant was that I can speak for myself as a piano player, that as an interactive player, a lot of the joy and a lot of the fun comes from trying to get into the personalities of the people you're playing. So, you know, you suss out a personality and then you try to think what works in your vocabulary that enhances that personality or creates a third gestalt of the two of you that's beyond what either of you can do. So that's what I meant, that the addition of a new personality brings out different things in me as an accompanist or provider of the bottom of the music as far as, you know, harmonically. And I get actual joy out of interacting with an energy field, the energy field being another human being. And since the human being changed, I there's reaction to the change of the personality and the you know, what strengths Scott brings to the table, how that works with my vocabulary and how I can enhance it or how it might bring out something completely different in me. So that's what I meant, not in a traditional jazz thing with a horn player standing in front of a rhythm section. And, you know, so Scott is, you know, 100% right in what he's saying. I was saying the same thing in a different way as it relates to me finding out new things about myself.
Kevin here. I'm kind of between the two. It's interesting. These albums, it's interesting. It's like, you know, not to sound arrogant, but like these albums, I feel like both of them are great records. I think we did a good job on both of them, but they're also, to use a cliche, almost Venus and Mars. Like they're complete polar opposites. And I agree with what Scott and Matt are saying about how it's not like the traditional rhythm section horn thing. That's just, you know, a way to categorize it. But Cool With That was more like that. Like I felt like in that particular iteration, the rhythm section locked in tight. And this is not meant as a derogation, but like Alan tended to just kind of float on top of it in a nice way. Like he would do his thing and it was definitely related to us, but it was more on top of the bed that the rhythm section was creating. And from the very first note we played together, like Scott just gets right down there and they're with us. So it's like, we're all horns, we're all rhythm sections, we're all everything. And it drastically changed the shape of everything. And I think for the better, and again, not to derogate what came before, I mean, Cool With That's an amazing record. But there are directions that I don't even think we would have thought of without Scott. It's like the colors that Scott brings to it. I mean, there are times that when I listen to this album, I'll be listening and everything like that, and I'll hear the rhythm section, and then I'll hear this other sound, and it's like, what is it? It's like, oh my God, that's Scott, but not playing like a traditional jazz horn player. It's really cool. I feel almost like this has become, for lack of a better term, more of a classical ensemble, in that there are more extended techniques, there are different timbres, there are different textures. The fact that Scott plays 85,000 horns, you never really know what direction it's going to go in. And it's really kind of fascinating. And like The really interesting thing is that when we got the masters, I was surprised because I didn't really remember much of that. You know, it was, you know, like was cool with that. When I got it, I was like, yeah, I remember that. And to me, No Subject was just like a new album, like someone else's album. It was interesting. Mm.
Well, let me dig a little deeper with that, Kevin and Matthew. With such a small window of time between Cool With That and No Subject, can you describe your mental and musical accommodations in having Scott with you?
This is Matt here. I would say, well, first of all, when you say such a little time, I mean, we move fast. I don't know what it means, such little time, because a human life, you know, is such little time, even if it's 95 years or something like that. And, you know, the music in and of itself has a life of its own and moves very quickly. And we as humans tend to either not move at all or to move very quickly. And but anyway, I would say that with Scott, what happened was that he kind of got in the middle of the middle rhythm section and started orchestrating with us. I would say on the Cool With That, the first album, the tendency was more for the rhythm section to lock in, and Alan's, you know, in a very great way to ride on top of it, and then that was it, you know. But I would say here the direction was, and I don't want to say compositional, I just don't want to use a cliche like that, but I would say the direction more was for Scott became more of a kind of a co-orchestrator of sorts, and was maybe cognizant of how he could help nudge things different ways. I mean, not that he had a will to like change the direction of anything, but in participating, like, you know, very little subtle things could change the whole shape of something or send something in a different direction. Kevin made an allusion to that earlier. And, you know, therefore he kind of entered as a co-orchestrator in a way that changed the sound of the band. And, you know, I mean, I think it takes it away from the jazz axis, if you will, slightly, somewhat, to more kind of a sweet oriented, whatever it is. I don't want to bring up the word classical, but whatever it is, you know. To me, that's some of the subtle changes that happen that makes it a whole different organism.
This is Kevin. I'd like to interject a bit here. And we'll go ahead and stipulate something that Matt and I keep, and Scott keep alluding to. It's like, with all five players involved, there's never been a lot of ego. So there's not been any wresting of control. This is truly a leaderless group. So when we say that, it's not like, you know, Scott like wrested things out of our hands, but it's just, he fit in so well that he was able to steer. We had another hand on the steering wheel and it felt great to have that. And we went in some really fascinating directions. The other thing I'd say, as far as working fast, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but didn't you two meet in the studio?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we moved.
Yeah, I don't think I had ever played. I don't think I had ever played with any of you other than Gerald. I had experience working with Gerald, with Roscoe Mitchell, and maybe elsewhere, but I don't think I'd ever played with the other two guys to rolling the tape.
This is Matt. I know you never played with me because I never met you before we saw you.
I met you because I used to hang out with Mingus Band quite a lot, but I've never met them.
Yeah, we had met.
No, I mean, unless there's some you know, weird psychic thing that can happen where you can never even meet somebody and you've played with them, then we had never played.
Yeah, I was startled by the amount of trust, you know, that they evinced by just going in the studio like that, completely untested, unrehearsed.
Well, we had lawyers lined up.
You know, for my part of it, I'll just say that I went into it very mindful and respectful of the idea that this is a pre-existing band. And I'm always the guy that wants to go to the music. You know, you create the music, but you also inhabit it. And so I didn't want to go in. I don't want to go into any musical situation and just layer my thing over it, you know. So I went in there with the feeling that I don't want to, you know, just impose something that's going to change everything up. But of course, then they're responsive, reactive players, and I'm a different person than the one that was there before. So the reality is it does change everything, even though I didn't set out to change anything. But if you're going to be yourself, you know, my goal is to approach the music with deference to what she wants, and but also bring my thing to what the music seems to want. And so the reality is that once she asks me for something and then I give it, then it does kind of change things.
You, including drummer Gerald Cleaver, who couldn't join us today, contributed music to the release. Would you tell us about your process in composing collectively and putting the pieces of your ideas into compositions?
This is Matt. I didn't understand the question because it implied that we each brought some of our compositions in.
Well, as I'm reading from the liner notes, that all compositions are by the four of you.
Right. That doesn't mean that we each brought some of our own compositions in, and you know, that means we shaped the pieces together.
This is totally free improv.
Okay. All right. Then your ideas, how did they meld together?
We've never discussed the music other than let's play a short one. On Cool With That, we said, let's play a fast one. On No Subject, we said, let's play one with just a horn trio and let's play one with just a piano trio. And by the way, the record label wants a few that are under 10 minutes.
I'm speaking for myself now. That's my specialty. I mean, if you're okay, there's different ways to look at the idiom that's supposedly called free jazz. Now, Scott had mentioned earlier about truly being interactive and being respectful of the history of the group and not just coming in and trying to lay his thing over us, which Scott is a master at coming in and figuring out where people are and responding. But I what he said there, there's in a free jazz, there is a lot of that where people can just do a certain thing, and you know, irrespective of what the climate or the circumstances, they just come in and do their thing, and it's sink or swim. I'm just saying there are that exist in this music. So, and somebody like myself who prides themselves on being very interactive and being able to suss out people's personality, break their code, and then respond accordingly. That's a specialty. I mean, that's what, when I go in the practice room, I work to be able to do that. So it's not just that you're a musician and then you to go in the studio and say, let's play free. I mean, that's not what's happening. With myself, it's a complete life choice and a discipline that, you know, I spend all my time working on how to be able to do that well. So when people discuss that, I mean, you know, the terms of how they discuss it just should really be clear that I spend 24/7 myself thinking about how to meld with other people's vocabulary and how to build form off of very sketchy ideas sometimes, whether it's a few notes. Not in this band, but in other bands I'm in, we do come in with written music, but sometimes it can be very sketchy. Sometimes it can be a lead sheet like a straight ahead jazz band would have, but maybe just some harmonic things, maybe harmonies and a melody, but the melody is very obliquely stated, and then we're just off from there to whatever gesturally the piece seems to say that where you should go. But I think everybody in this band has had massive experience in all of the above, like in completely controlled situations where there's tons of written music. You know, I have a background in classical music, so I mean, they have, you know, in situations that are loose but sort of controlled, whatever that means, and in situations that are completely, not, you know, open, but and in situations with people that are open, with people that really have the talent to do it, and we all have experience in situations that are open with people that don't have the talent to do it. So when you put all that together in the chalice and mix it up, we have a lot of experience to be able to go in the studio and you know, a piece can get started by one gesture somebody does on their instrument and everybody kind of picks up on it or picks up on a facet of it that and you know, goes from there and just unfolds in a way that none of us know how it's going to unfold.
This is decidedly not my specialty. I had done it a little bit in a trio with Elliot Sharp, but it's been many years. Matt and I discussed putting together a band with Daryl, but we never actually discussed whether it was going to be compositional or what. It just kind of ended up this way. And I was always a little scared of it, not, well, because there are too much of, because of something Matt said, there are a lot of people who play free, but it feels like they're basically bringing the same bag to every piece. And I feel like it's actually, I don't like using, you know, I don't like using the word free. You notice we didn't bring it up until just now because you get placed into that. I mean, sometimes it can be a little dull. It's like you're buying the same record over and over and over again. What I appreciate about this band is that it doesn't feel this way. Like apparently you didn't realize that they weren't composed until just now. And that's, I find that flattering. And I find that to me is like a sense that we accomplished what we wanted it to be, that this is just music and it doesn't matter how it was composed, how long it had been composed before we played it, but it has a narrative. It has a flow to it that sometimes free improv doesn't have. We're able to tell stories. And if the story takes 10 minutes, it takes 10 minutes. If it takes 27 minutes, like it did on the earlier album, it takes 27 minutes, but it never feels like we're filibustering, much like it probably sounds like I'm doing now. But like, and as far as I approach it, since I haven't really had the experience that Matthew or Gerald or Scott have had with this sort of music, I learned very quickly the only way for me to approach it is to just completely empty myself. I have to empty myself of fear, ego, preconceptions, anything, and just go with it. And that means not being afraid to lay out, but not being afraid to play. Just go with it. It can't be about you.
I think that's all very well put.
Gentlemen, let's talk about the frenemy of jazz and improvised music artists, the media. When I hear journalists use the word accessible to describe music, it sounds like a signal to listeners, exactly, who aren't familiar with or who don't listen to more adventurous jazz and improvised music that, yeah, this is okay. You can listen to this. With this release on bassist Christian McBride's Brother Mister label, an imprint of Mac Avenue Records, do you feel this need to identify your approach to playing as something else to attract listeners?
Okay, I'd like to weigh in on that because you hit a nerve with me with that word accessible. This is this is a bone of contention with me. I've objected to the way that word is used many times. I've gotten into long arguments about it with certain writers. I dislike the glib use of that term for certain music to the denigration of certain other music by implication. When you say, oh, this album is very accessible, you're saying that other music is not accessible. And of course, adventurous music is always the victim of these kinds of onslaughts. So I have always argued that there's a false notion about certain music that you have to be some kind of an insider, or you have to have special training, or a decoder ring, or something like that, or be part of some hip clique or group or anything. You know, this music is for anyone. It's not for everyone, but it's for anyone. The door is open. Come on in. The water's fine. That's my view. We create a world, and then we fling the door open and say, come on in. You know, you don't have to come in. But don't tell us that this room is not accessible when we flung the door open and arranged things in a way that we find pleasing and that we hope you will find pleasing.
And I think Scott really just hit on it. And you know, when he said, door that we find pleasing and hope you, I mean, that's all I can do is kind of make music that I'd want to listen to. You know, so, I don't, if we put it out there, you know, we're putting it out there because we feel good about it and think that it has an audience that would feel good about it. So I don't really know what those words mean other than, you know, accessible as compared to what, you know.
To me, it feels like the other side of the coin that when I was talking about people using the word free. It's that accessible has certain connotations that are negative, and free has certain connotations in the other direction are negative. Use the F word or the A word, avant, and people run for the hills, even though free music's been around for, well, I was going to say 60 years, but, you know, it even predates free jazz, free improv. And the thing about it is that, like I say, you wouldn't know that this is free. And as far as being accessible, I found it very interesting dealing with the press on this one, because it's funny, we've ended up in this weird segment where it turns out the people that usually get hold of our records or Matt's records or Gerald's records, they haven't gotten this one yet, or they haven't noticed it because it came from Mac Avenue. And then there's people that have gotten there, they're getting this album because it came from Mac Avenue, and they're like, wow. And there's this one fellow that did a public radio podcast, and it was kind of beautiful. I've reached out to Mark Rennie to ask him to see if he could set up an interview with us, because the guy is so unfamiliar that he has no, he tripped over Gerald's name. He doesn't know who Matthew is, who Scott is, certainly doesn't know East Axis. And you could tell he has no vocabulary to deal with the music, but he loves it. And it's just beautiful watching him try to wrestle with this thing that he has no idea what it's about. But like he described, he listens so closely. Like Scott, he actually describes a couple of licks that you put in there. And he's like, typically, I don't like it when a guy does that because it shows they're inexperienced. But this guy is so obviously seasoned that it was just perfect. And it was just beautiful because this guy's never listened to free jazz, you can tell. But you can tell he listened to the entire record, and he listened several times. And I want to meet more people like that, because there shouldn't be this stigma 60 something years after Ornette Coleman.
As for performers who stretch out in other activities and music, Gerald, he composes and performs as an electronics artist. Kevin, you've worked in the private financial sector. Is that correct?
A little bit, yeah. I was in the banking, and I was in publishing. I had a trio for like 12 years with Frank Lacey, the trombonist, and you know, and I've worked with some other musicians.
Yeah, are you still with the Music Workers Alliance?
Very much.
Okay. And Matthew, you have written opinion pieces for publications, and recently you contributed to the liner notes to the upcoming Elemental release by pianist Bill Evans.
I also did contributed to the Mal Waldron one for the same record company.
Okay. And Scott,
and wrote the liner notes for Hassan Ibn Ali solo. You know, I've done a lot of writing.
Yep. And Scott, where have you dabbled?
Camping, fishing, repairing musical instruments, collecting paintings by science fiction artist Richard Powers, collecting airship memorabilia. I have an airship room in my house. I make things with wood. I've made shelves and planters and shutters and all kinds of things. So I'm kind of a tinkerer.
So this is perfect. So at this time in your playing careers, is this what you're looking for? Other players with multifaceted lives and experiences? And if you could tell me why or why not?
Well, I'm looking for here. Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Scott. You'll be more funny than I am, so I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I just was going to say, I'm looking for everything. So I'm looking for what you just said, you know, playing with other experienced players and so on. But I also have a lot of solo projects that I work on. And right now I have two daily projects that I work on every day, unless I'm out of town, recording all the parts as a symphony project I've been working on almost 4 years now. And I probably have about 15 years to go. It's up to 130 instruments, big orchestra of impossible combinations of instruments. Some of them are one of a kind. So it's the kind of orchestra that exists only in my dreams, you know. So I'm into that, a lot of kind of stuff like that as well. But then, of course, playing interactive music with other humans, thoughtful humans, there's no substitute for that. I never want to get too far away from that.
I've never really met any musicians who are multifaceted. I mean, they all have things. You know, I'm working here in a trombonist performance space, and it turns out he's really into circuit bent instruments and toys, collects sock monkeys. Every musician I know has something interesting about them besides music.
As far as looking for something, I'm not really looking for anything. I'm just kind of, you know, get up in the morning and do what I need to do to get through the day. And, I feel blessed to be in a good playing situations with people who I feel a real affinity to and can really make music to. That's just, you know, a life blessing that's been giving you. But as far as like, you know, any apotheosis, like at 62 years old, I am looking for this and that and that. I'm just trying to get through the day every day, basically.
I want to play with more people and more often. You know, like this guy, Scott Robinson, I'd like to play with him a lot more. I've heard he's good.
I've heard that too. I heard he's very nice. He likes things. He likes to tinker. He likes to build.
I only like things I can't stand.
Well, you should play with me.
As we come to the end of this interview, I'd like to give you all the last word. Is there something I haven't asked you? Is there something you would like to let listeners know about you or your music, upcoming projects? Why don't we start with Kevin?
Yes, ladies, he is single. I don't have much else to say,
and for good reason.
Matthew?
Well, I you know, it's not about me per se, but I think there was a lot of there's a whole history behind this album, No Subject. And by history, I mean everybody involved, their whole life history leading up to it. And it was a very beautiful experience to make the album, to be in this group, and we really like to share it with the world. I think people should really deal with this album. And that means hearing it, purchasing it. You know, the music industry is an ecosystem. We need people to support the music to keep it going. You know, it's not just like patting you on the back and saying, I mean, you know, in order to keep all this moving forward, musicians, record companies, recording studios, you know, need the support, which means we need people to purchase the product. So I feel very strong about this album. I feel that the spirit of it and the beauty of it is just there. And I really would like people to check it out. And we would really love to share it with the world.
And Scott.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree with Matt. You know, this, your listeners out there should feel like this music is for them. You know, it's, I mean, you asked earlier what we do to try to attract listeners. I don't think we're trying to attract listeners. We're trying to make music that will then hopefully draw them the way it draws us. So our focus is on the music, making the best music we can, most interesting music we can, and heartfelt music that we can. And then we offer it up, and it's for, as I said, it's for anyone that wants to step in and take a look around, because in a certain sense, I think of music as a living being. And in another sense, I think of it as a place that you can visit, walk around, nobody's going to get hurt. And you might find a comfortable spot for yourself where you feel at home, and you're interested and engaged just the way I feel when I go out into nature and I, you know, have my favorite places to go. When I lived in East Harlem, I used to go to the Conservatory Gardens almost every day and sit in there. And there were these amazing praying mantises and all these different creatures and birds and all kinds of plants and things, endlessly wonderful and amazing things to look at and surround yourself with. So I would just suggest to your listeners, kind of, you know, you might just take the same kind of approach and just step in and find a park bench and sit down and sip your coffee and just take it in and let it amaze as it does us, as it unfolds for us when we're making it.
This concludes my interview with members of the group East Access. For more information, macavenue.com. And we'll end today's show with music. Coming out on February 24th with the second release by his new John Quartet, trumpeter Josh Evans, saxophonist and bass clarinetist Marcus Strickland, and drummer Nasheet Waits. Bassist Christian McBride's Brother Mister Productions, Prime. This is the composition Head Bedlam. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next week for another show. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.